Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Track, a podcast for runners. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This podcast is dedicated to and centred upon the committed club runner, the committed amateur. This week on Track, we will discuss the few races that have happened over the last couple of weeks. We'll have a chat about our own running in 2020, and we have a very exciting interview with marathon runner and Olympian Ali Dixon. Once again, I'm joined by five-time marathon runner Kat Hutchison, George Beardmore, the ninth ranked under 20 over 3,000 metres in 2020, and Worcester AC's best supporting male, Robbie Campbell. George, how are you getting on?
Yeah, good, thank you. Well, ready to go back to uni, I think, this weekend, depending on the announcement tonight. So, yeah, all good.
Yeah, I should say we're talking on Monday evening, and 8 p.m. is the new announcement from Boris, so we may have some lockdown news after that. But Robbie, how are you? You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay, thank you, Ben. Not bad.
Have you got your trophy yet?
Got my trophy, yeah. I got quite a major presentation, actually, Ben. Surprised you weren't invited.
I was.
Touché. Yeah, they decided to give me the trophy after the most miserable, wettest, horrendous track session in the history of track sessions, when everybody just wanted to go home, and Andy Peach, our treasurer, decided to kind of hold everyone back and made a little presentation, which was slightly embarrassing, seeing as it was nobody wanted to be there, including me, including Andy.
So is it on the mantelpiece?
Let's just say yes. It's actually getting moved from room to room with my children. So I caught them the other day presenting it to each other for the hardest kick with the football they got for Christmas. So I told them to treat it with respect and stop messing about.
How are you, Kat?
Yeah, I'm better now. Seem to be almost totally recovered from the COVID this time, which is great. Injury-free and well, so yeah.
Okay, well, before we get on to the few race results, as obviously it's the first show of 2021, we thought we'd spend a bit of time just looking back for the last time at 2020. So, George, if I start with you, how did you rate your 2020 from a running perspective? Any sort of real highlights, anything you learnt, anything you're going to take forward with you?
Yeah, pretty obviously not as many races, particularly the last few months, as I'd have liked. But I've definitely trained better than ever. I think I've learned that, like, rather than just doing the same thing every week, it's good to have like phases of training and blocks and train more like that rather than just constantly training. Yeah, I've had some good results. The inter-counties in March was particularly good. The track was pretty good as well, the few races I got on there. So yeah, all things considered, not bad.
But performance of the year for you? We had to pick one?
Probably the inter-counties cross-country in, I think it was like the 7th of March, and in the last race before, well, my last race before lockdown, and I came 14th, which was much higher than I'd ever come at a national cross country in the past. And like just going into lockdown with that result, it meant, I think if I'd raced badly there, it would have just been even more frustrating that I couldn't go out and race again and make up for it. Whereas I was quite happy going into the first lockdown with a good result and just focus on training.
What's your mark out of 10, George, for your year?
7 or 8, probably. Would be higher, but just haven't raced as much as I would normally like, so don't quite feel I've got the PBs across the board to show for the training I've done, but still a pretty good year. So yeah, 7 or 8.
From the outside looking in, George, you look like you just kind of absolutely nailed it, really, in terms of, say, just kind of getting the cycles done and just kind of churning it out, kind of consistency, and probably, well, I know Ben got a couple of good PBs as well, didn't you? But kind of getting those PBs to show for it, the kind of back end of the summer, was fully deserved, definitely. I know you're doing the half marathon in February, providing it's going to be on. Did you have half an eye on that while you were doing the base training, or what was the idea behind the kind of base mileage?
Like a lot of people, I was thinking in the summer, oh, this will be over by kind of the end of the summer, September, October, and cross country will go ahead as normal. So I think my thinking throughout the summer was get ready for cross country season. Obviously that then didn't happen, but that was the thinking, and then it seemed to work for my track races as well.
Robbie, how about yourself?
Yeah, less positive than George by quite a long way, really. So I managed to pick up a 10k PB right at the start of the year, and that was supposed to be a bit of a springboard for, well, I suppose, kind of quicker PBs as we kind of went through the year. And obviously with lockdown and what's happened, I think the thing that I've learned more than anything about myself is kind of how much I needed those kind of club races, or need those club races to give me that structure. Definitely feel that at times it's kind of swayed from feeling unbelievably fit but with nothing to do to broken from injury and making bad decisions and kind of really losing focus on not the point of it all, but just kind of near goals, if that makes sense. So at least when you've got the cross-country races and even the relays, and then you kind of pick up the, you know, maybe a few kind of half marathons or 10Ks along the way, you always feel like you're in a kind of quite a smooth kind of cycle of training and tapering and racing. And yeah, I definitely feel like it's been a bit of a disappointing year. Made some really bad decisions on running through injuries, and just kind of resulted in just a bit of frustration. And then just a series of really crap 5K time trials. I never want to do a 5K time trial ever again. It's the worst thing about coronavirus by a mile. So yeah, so completely negative, pessimistic 3 out of 10 for me, Ben.
As you say, hopefully next year with more races, more regular races, it just sort of goes from one to the other and you sort of string a few more positive weeks.
Yeah. Obviously, George is in a really good position, obviously, at Loughborough, which is, you know, everything's kind of geared up to the coaching and the running and the racing. And, you know, you're almost like a full-time athlete, but in everything but name, really, in terms of the approach to it. But I think for kind of laymen like myself, who kind of rely on the club kind of racing scene and the kind of the races to keep you kind of organised and keep you focused on things, I think when all of that's taken away, I think it's a bit of a shock to the system, really. And I think that kind of that period of time when maybe late summer, where we were kind of looking at races and didn't know whether they were going to happen, and you know, and it's just for me, you kind of need to be, you know, all in, basically. You know, the thought of kind of entering a race and starting training for it and then it being kind of taken away, kind of mentally, that's not very good for me, really. Hopefully better 2021.
Kat, how about yourself?
Yeah, I think it's been an up and down year. I think it started well with my marathon training block. Managed to get up to 90 mile weeks and I think I was probably in the best shape I've been in. And obviously that was in March, and then marathons were all cancelled, so we don't get to find out what would have happened. But yeah, from then it's been a little more like Robbie's year, really, a bit frustrating with injuries and not really getting going. I think I got back up to a reasonably decent block in the summer, and then, but I was running injured and just never really got back to running pain-free for the rest of the year until this very last week. Then there was the illness as well. And then, just this week, I finally got back to normal in the last week of the year, running pain-free and running decent amount again. So, yeah, I'd give the year a 5 out of 10, because I think although it's been frustrating, I've also learned a lot from the year. I now have my favourite running mantra, don't be an idiot, and that I'm going to use in races too. So that should help me going forwards. And yeah, just I think I really have learned it this time, rather than just saying it, I really know that I shouldn't be an idiot. So yeah, hopefully I'm positive about the marathon next year. Whether Newport goes ahead or not, I'll train and put a decent block in, because if it doesn't go ahead, there's Manchester in October, so I'll have already built up a decent base then and can build up again for Manchester. So yeah, hopefully I'm gonna have a good 2021.
And one of the questions we have here is, what are you most looking forward to in 2021? I imagine you've just answered that, one of those two marathons, I suppose.
Yeah, running a good one at one of those two would be good.
George, thing you're most looking forward to, running related in 2021?
I mean, I'm hoping to do a half marathon at the end of February. I'm not so sure that'll happen now, but I think definitely doing a longer road race. So yeah, the half marathon at some point this year, that would probably be my big thing on my list.
And Robbie, thing you're most looking forward to?
Yeah, well, probably, I mean, I've got the marathon, all things being equal, in April, but probably the thing I'm most looking forward to is getting back to a bit of road relays. And, you know, I mean, if we can kind of get those on in the spring, I think that would be quite a thing to be a part of after 12 months of kind of being away. So how about you, Ben? We should probably ask you a few questions as well, really, about your year, rather than, I can see that you're digging for us to ask questions for you to rate it as a 10 out of 10. I can see it from the eyebrows.
Yeah, as always, dropping the hints. I've enjoyed this year. I think I've been on here saying a few times before, I love the training more than I love the racing anyway. So this year hasn't been a huge problem for me. I've loved just stringing week after week together, and I've been fortunate enough to do that without getting injured. So really good from a training perspective. Hit a couple of PBs, so a half marathon PB in March at Bath, and then a 5K and a 10K PB later in the year. 5K wasn't perhaps what I wanted it to be, but it was a PB nonetheless. So it was a good year. I suppose the one thing missing for me was a marathon. So that is the thing I'm looking forward to most next year, either Wrexham in April or London, or this year, or London in October. So I give myself, or give the year, a 7 out of 10. Just give it a good training year, few PBs, but not quite maximum marks because I want to run a marathon and I want to run one well. So
your Strava stats confused Sunny, who I probably should say is my wife, on Instagram. She was trying to kind of do the calculations on what you were averaging a week and et cetera. Couldn't quite get her head around it. So we worked out that you managed to average about 90 a week for the whole year.
Yeah, did you care about what's going on in my life? Is that what you sort of said?
Well, I said this is the level, really. This is kind of what she needs to appreciate in terms of, you know, if I'm going to get faster, I've got to start kind of running 100-mile weeks regularly, basically. So,
yeah, I think it was probably 85 to 90 on average miles a week, which is my biggest year ever. So saying to George the other day on a run, hopefully that will sort of pay dividends next year.
Yeah.
Some of that will carry forward. But yeah, I've really enjoyed the training this year, so I can't be doom and gloom about it.
Do you think anyone will ever give the year a 10 out of 10, or do you think we'll all be typical runners, always feeling like we could have done better?
Yeah, I think you always want to do a bit more, don't you?
Yeah.
It doesn't take long after PB to think, oh, I could have gone a bit quicker.
So. To be fair, if I'd have had Ben's year or George's year, then it would definitely have been a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Robbie, you're going to talk us through the first race, following on from our interview with Chris Barnes on our last episode that you and George conducted, the Podium 5K event, which took place on December the 27th.
Yeah, so exactly like you say, this was on the back of the Chris Barnes interview in the last episode. The ended up with just the two races. So obviously the elite men, so the sub 15, and then the sub 16:30, which was a kind of mixed field. I think there were maybe two or three other races that were pending for the day, but they got cancelled in the days before just because of the logistics, from what I could understand, around kind of crossing tiers and people travelling. And, you know, ultimately, I think it was just a sensible decision by Chris Barnes just to kind of trim it back. Probably what I should say as well is that this was run on the December the 27th, and conditions were absolutely atrocious the night before. So it was, was it Storm Bella? Was it the night before? It turned into a kind of proper running race, really. Less about time and more about actually kind of getting a victory, which went to Emil Keres, the lead runner, clock 14:11. And then that was ahead of Ross Millington in 14:12 and Joe Wigfield in 14:13. So that kind of demonstrates how close that finish was. A total of 20 runners dipped into the sub-15 time, including Richard Allen, who ran 14:14, Sam Charlton 14:16, Ossian Perrin ran 14:18, and then plus 2012 Olympian Nick McCormick, who ran his fastest time for 6 years with 14:21. And then just a note from Chris Barnes on that sub-15 race. He kind of acknowledged that conditions weren't great, as you could see from the B race. But then there was a pack in the A race that basically decided to kind of run together, forget the time and kind of work off each other. And he described it as brilliant to watch, because after the 1K, the entire field was still together. So a proper kind of old school approach to running. And then in the sub 16:30 race, so it was the win went to, in the ladies, went to Kate Avery, who clocked 16:18. Hannah Nuttall finished second in 16:38. And then Eleanor Bolton, who's obviously a name that kind of keeps coming up over and over again, who was the fastest woman at the 10K earlier in the year. And she was third in 16:59. No footage of it. So again, kind of no streaming from what I can understand. There was a kind of note I saw on the Facebook site that alluded to something that was on there and then got taken down. But I'm sure that from what I can understand, there was no kind of plan to stream it.
Another really good race we saw recently was the Sport City Indoor 3000 meter event. It took place on the 2nd of January and it took place in Manchester. So if we have a look at the female race first, we saw Chiara McGean, who's coached by Steve Vernon and runs for the City of Lisbon in Ireland club. She came first. Jip Vastenberg, a name we've mentioned lots of times, who runs for Stockport, came second. And Amy Pratt, another name we've mentioned a few times, came third. 8:54 for the winner, 8:55 second place, and 9:03 for third place for Amy Pratt. Also in that race was Elizabeth Bird, who finished fourth in 9:17. Friend of the show, Jenny Nesbitt, who finished fifth also in 9:17, who's running for Cardiff. In the men's event, Mark Pearce won that in 7:52. Jack Rowe came second in 7:54, which was a PB for Jack Rowe, and also a PB for Mark Pearce. And the name we've just mentioned, Emil Kuras, came third in 8:02, running a 3,000 metre PB also. Fourth place was Ross Millington, fifth Zach Seddon, and sixth Thomas Keane. There's some high-level indoor 3,000 metre performances there across the board in Manchester.
And just to follow on from that, the top two men, so Mark Pearce and Jack Rowe, they both ran the European Indoor Championships qualifying standard, and then in the women's, so did Kira McGean, Jip Vastenberg and Amy Pratt. So the European Indoors are beginning of March in Poland, so hopefully they go ahead and those five athletes have all got a qualifying time. They do.
There have been some sort of more low-key events that have taken place over the last few weeks. Let me just run through these really quickly. There was a 10K in Chippenham on December the 20th, which Ben Cole won in 31:56. The Indian Queen's Half Marathon in Cornwall, and under 20, Sam Goodchild won the men's race in 72:08, also on December the 20th. We saw Jennifer Walsh and Matthew Nelson take the race honours at the Even Splits 5K in Hull on December the 20th. Switch our attention to an international event. A couple to go through. So the Cursa del Nassos in Barcelona, I've only butchered that pronunciation, place on New Year's Eve. There were 5K and 10K events taking place. If we start with the 5K event, Jimmy Gracia won that race in 13:39. He also ran in a fairly competitive 10K shortly afterwards. But in the 5K race, we saw 10 men go under 14 minutes. So a fairly quick race happening there. On the women's side of things for the 5K, we saw the 1500 metre world record holder, Ziba Dibaba, win the event in 15 minutes dead, copying George at the Milton Keynes 5K. Her sister, Anna Dibaba, actually came second in 16:02, so over a minute behind the winning female. For UK interest, Britain's Jenny Spink came in as the 10th female for the 5K in 16:59. And then she also returned for the 10K and ran 35:32 shortly after to finish in ninth place. So I think when I first saw the results, I saw 16:59. You think that's not a particularly impressive run, but then knowing that Jenny jumped into the 10K shortly afterwards and ran 35 minutes was fairly impressive. And perhaps treating that like a bit of a training session even.
Very impressive. I mean, you can only think it was a session, because if she was going flat out in the 5K and ran 16:59, there's no way then being enough in you to then go and run a 35 minute 10K. So it must have been planned, but yeah, very impressive. I wouldn't fancy it myself.
Her 5K time was actually, looking at power of 10, was actually pretty close to her PB. Well, 16:41 her PB. But yeah, I thought it would be quicker than that.
Yeah, but her 10K is quicker, isn't it? Her 10K PB is 33:34. So yeah, perhaps that 5K is just not a strong point for her. Obviously, a more of a marathon runner, I think, and a half marathon runner. She's got 2:31 set in 2019. Yeah, in Frankfurt. Yeah,
that's quite that 2:31 marathon. That's just doesn't really convert to a shorter distances, does it? Really, but.
Also, New Year's Eve, we saw the San Silvestre event in Madrid, which was a 10K held on a 2.5K loop. Apparently, it was cold and windy conditions, but the race was won by Ethiopia's World Half Marathon bronze medalist, Yelimetzerf Yehulu, in 31:17. They won that clearly ahead of Kenya's World Marathon champion, Ruth Chepngetich, in 31:50. Daniel Simiu Mbeyo of Kenya won the men's race in 27:41. So that's all the race results, guys. We sort of head over to the news, and the main sort of news story we're going to talk about this time around is that from an Athletics Weekly article that we've seen, the news that there's going to be a new consultation as to whether we should see equal distances for males and females during the cross-country races. Now, and this is obviously something that's been brought up many times before, and I suppose is an ongoing debate. I'll just read off a bit of information from the article, and then we can have a bit of a chat about it. What it says is, national governing body begins push for gender equality by starting consultation process with clubs and cross-country organisers. And the question is, should male and female race distances in cross-country be the same? UK Athletics believe they should. And in the new year, the governing body will start a consultation with the sport to find out how it can be achieved. In a statement this week, UKA said there could be greater equality in some cross-country races and competitions by enabling all athletes to access the same opportunities through the race distances available to them. Working with the Home Nation Athletics Federation, UKA plans to release a survey to capture thoughts on how cross-country can provide equal opportunities for all participants at all levels in the future. The push for this sort of drive for equality seems to be from UKA's new chief executive, Jo Coates, and she seems to be the one sort of pushing this forward. At the global level, the senior men's race at the World Cross Country Champs was traditionally 12K, while the women raced 8K until 2017, and now both sexes run 10K each. Scottish Athletics and some English leagues have also equalised their race distances in recent years. But major events in England, such as the historic National and England Schools Champs, continue to see a race distance disparity, with obviously males running further than females. So there's quite a lot of backstory to this one, guys, and I think lots of people have differing opinions. Kat, if I come to you first, what are your thoughts on the way it is at the moment and where you see it going forward? What do you think about it all?
So I think I like running the shorter distance, but I can see people's argument that we don't cut the half marathon short for women and we don't cut the 5K short for women. But I think we, over cross country, the distance isn't as important, and it's more about equalising the time that we're out racing over the cross country distance. So I think as long as the female winner and the male winner are finishing in somewhere near the same times, then the races are equal. And I'd support them keeping them as they are now, because it's more about turning up. We don't want to be out there for an hour and a half racing just because it takes us longer to cover the ground. It should be, you know, a half an hour race for each. The distance is irrelevant to me, I think. So yeah, hopefully it stays the same, but we'll see.
George, what do you think?
Yeah, I can see both sides of the argument. I think, like Kat was saying, the interesting thing would be whether if you move or made the women's races longer, whether like less people turned up because they didn't want to run longer. Whereas I can't imagine there's any woman that aren't turning up to their local cross-country league because the race is too short. So would you risk like participation numbers by making it almost too hard, if that makes sense? I think if the general consensus is that the women are happy with the distance of their race, then maybe fine to leave as it is. But at the same time, yeah, the track and road races are the same distance. So why should cross country be any different?
What do you reckon, Robbie?
Yeah, I think you've got to be careful to kind of mix up equality and just kind of making sports for men and women the same, in a sense. I think if you kind of take tennis, for example, there's not much clamour to make Grand Slam women's tennis five sets, because I think it's kind of universally acknowledged that it would probably diminish the quality of the tennis. And I think there's probably an argument for the cross country in terms of the sharp end and the actual kind of competitive race. And exactly like Kat said, all you're doing is just making them run for longer. So, you know, so it's, will that quality of sharp end racing, you know, essentially be diminished because you add an extra 2 or 3 kilometres onto the end of it, which just then becomes an absolute slogfest, and it's probably unlikely to kind of result in a, you know, anything like a kind of exciting finish. It would just be about kind of more of a marathon mentality and getting over the line. Yeah, it's interestingly, I'm desperately trying to look it up now so I can sound like I know what I'm talking about. But I know there's a group that drives this quite hard on social media, isn't it? I'm sure you've probably all seen it. And I'm going to put my neck out looking at the social media kind of groups and the sites associated with them. I don't think they're at the sharp end of the racing. And so therefore it is just a case of, you know, just kind of getting round, and, you know, and again, that could, it kind of comes down to who are we trying to kind of appease, really? Is cross country racing? It should be about kind of the racing. It's not just about kind of competing. Whereas I think for potentially kind of 10K half marathons and marathons, there's that element of, you know, somebody kind of entering paying £30, and then, you know, then you can kind of say that you've ran a benchmark, you know, kind of distance. Whereas cross country, exactly like Kat said, is kind of less about the distance and more about the kind of competitive element. What's your opinion, Ben?
I don't know. I think I'm stuck in the middle here. I'm not sure what my opinion is. When I first heard it, I thought, yes, right, of course they should be the same. Why shouldn't they be the same? Marathons are the same, as Kat said, half marathons are the same. If it takes women longer, why is that a problem? But I think there are arguments either way. I think it would just suit different people. I think the real, so if it's a longer race, different women might win compared to if it's a shorter race, like anyone else. I think the real issue I would have is as George raised, if putting up distances meant less women turn up, I think that would be a problem. I don't know if that would be the case, but if it was the case, that would be an issue, I think. George, I'll come to you in a second. Let me just reel off what's happening currently in England. So the English national cross country sees the following race distances. Senior men run 12K, senior women run 8K. Under 20s, 10K for men, 6K for women. Under 17s, 6K for men, 5K for women. Under 15s is where we see some the same. So we see 4K for boys and girls, and under 13s, 3Ks for boys and girls. And somewhat similar, although not identical, at the English Schools Championships. George?
I've got the English Schools website here, and there's quite a big difference, bigger than I realised, in between the distances boys and girls running that, because the senior girls only run 4.4k, and that's the same distance that the junior boys run, which is under 13s running the same distance as under 17s. Under 13 boys run the same distance as under 17 girls. So you'd then have to change all the age groups as well, because you can't expect senior girls to be running 4.4k, so senior girls being kind of sixth form, and then going up to, 10K for the national cross country when they're an adult. It's a big jump, so they'd have to kind of change everything, I think, if they were going to do it.
Looking at the English Schools Championships as well, what I would say, the under 15 boys run 4.4K and the under 15 girls run 3K. And I know obviously everyone develops at different times. I wonder at under 15 level, does there need to be a difference? I think that's perhaps a bigger gap than it needs to be at under 15 level, or a bigger difference, I should say.
Just to kind of colour my point a little bit. So the group is called Run Equal, if any of you have come across it, and they specifically are about, I suppose, lobbying British athletics and England athletics for specifically for equal distances on cross country. races, basically. That's what they do.
Devil's advocate with you two for a second. Your point about the need to run similar takes a similar time. Why would you say they need to take similar time?
Because we never go home and compare our cross country times. We only ever say we've been to cross country and we've finished in, 20th position. We don't ever go back and say I ran 32 minutes. The time is just, it should be equal that we go on a Saturday morning and I go for a half an hour, 40 minute run and you go for a half an hour, 40 minute run over a cross country course. And that, I mean, I suppose that doesn't work as there's probably people down the field that, but as long as the rough time of the leaders is the same, then it kind of just, it means we all turn up and do an equal thing, because there's no point in trying to say that women and men are the same, because otherwise we'd just have one world record and we'd all aim for that. We're different and you just have to accept that. So cross country, the distance is irrelevant, so we're not going to put our PBs down for our cross country because the conditions are different every time we turn up. So it should be much more about equalising how long we're out on the course.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that's an absolutely nailed on point of view that maybe before we're talking tonight I hadn't even really considered. But so if you've got take the winner of a female race over 8K and the male winner over 10K, or even the competitors that are kind of competing further down the field, and effectively the idea of the cross country kind of discipline is that you're going to run your hardest for however long it takes. So therefore, in a way, it's almost an equality thing to have everybody running different distances, because everyone's running for the same amount of time and hopefully kind of running their hardest. I suppose, Kat, what do you think the outcome of the survey will be?
I don't know. I think if women really think about it, then they'll choose to keep the distance. But I think some people just think, and like Ben said, when you first read the question, you think, yeah, of course they should run the same distance. And so if people look at it like that, they might just instantly answer saying, yeah, of course we should run the same distance, without really thinking about what cross country is about. So, but I don't know. I think it will come out similar to the other nearly 50-50. But I think if people really thought about it, and maybe if they listen to this, then it will come out more like the 80%. I'm sure when Ben listens to it back, he'll agree.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm reserving my decision just yet. Be interested to see what happens. I'm not sure when we will find out the results of this consultation. It doesn't say. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do it and what comes up. Yeah, George.
And the other thing is, if they do change the distances, do they kind of bring both men and women like one up, one down? So do then men end up running shorter because it's 12K and 8K at the moment? Would it be both 10K rather than both 12K? And then should the men have a say in whether they want their race to be shorter? Yeah, well, it's how they do it that would be the next problem if they do vote for it.
That's a good point. Yeah. We will see. Well, I don't think we're in trouble just yet, so we'll leave it there before we get ourselves in trouble. That's it, guys, basically. What we do have for you is a really exciting interview from our point of view. We're really chuffed that this person agreed to have a chat with us. And Kat, you sat down a couple of weeks ago now with Olympian Ali Dixon.
Yeah, I think it's a while ago now, but I was really lucky to get to chat to Ali. She's obviously, when I first started becoming aware of what elite runners were and things, she was running well at the London Marathon, so she's always been sort of one of the elite runners that I was a big fan of, so I was really excited when I got to interview her. So she's best known for representing GB at the Rio Olympics. But she's got impressive PBs over all distances, and is also the current 50-kilometre world record holder. So, and also holds the world record for the fastest half marathon dressed as a superhero. Another good record. It was really great to chat to her, really interesting. We talked over some of her PBs and it was really good to hear her talking about how she, on quite a few of them, she had just taken her watch off and just run to feel, and they'd actually produce PVs. She's really, really chatty throughout the whole thing. It's really great to hear all about her involvement in her local club and things like that. And obviously all about her experience in Rio, as she is our first Olympian that we've had on. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed talking to her and hope everyone enjoys listening to it.
Before we leave, anything coming up exciting for you guys over the coming weeks? Any New Year's resolutions you're going to try and stick to, George?
No, I don't really do New Year's resolutions generally. I'm supposed to be going to university this weekend. I've got exams, online exams, which will be a bit of a pain, to be honest, in a few weeks. So, yeah, get them out of the way and then, yeah, keep training.
Kat, anything exciting coming up?
No, I'm just really looking forward to getting back to doing some decent miles. So I'll just probably do quite a bit this week. The hospital is really busy, so that's going to be taking up most of my time for the next 2 months, but hopefully I can keep running through it this time. So yeah, that's about it for the next week.
Yeah, just looks like it's going to be homeschooling and working from home and back to 3-hour morning runs potentially, or maybe even nine hour morning runs. So yeah, we'll see. What about you, Ben? How's the baby, by the way? How's Jack?
He's doing well, thank you. Yeah, he's over 3 weeks old now. We're getting some sleep, not as much as we used to get, but he's good as gold. He's eating and he's sleeping. So yeah, all good. Just going to try and creep up the miles each week since Jack's been born. That's it, guys. Thanks very much for joining. And we hope you enjoy the interview. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. Cheers, guys.
See you, everyone. Bye.
See ya.
This week on chat, we're delighted to be joined by marathon runner Ali Dixon. How are you, Ali?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.
Great to have you here. Before we delve into all your achievements, just talk us through what you're up to at the moment with your training. And I think I see from Strava you're doing some really disciplined rehab runs.
Yeah, I got injured when I was pacing at the London Marathon. My back went into spasm. I thought it was just because of the cold, but then physio thought I might have a stress fracture of the sacrum. So we managed to get that scanned, and thankfully there was no stress fracture showed up. But yeah, from London, I didn't run for 4 weeks. I had 2 weeks planned rest anyway, because, you know, I'd run Tokyo Marathon earlier in the year, and then I'd trained all the way through lockdown and over the summer, and I just felt like I needed a rest. So yeah, I had 2 weeks planned, then still 2 weeks of nothing, just to give the back a chance to settle and to get the scan and the results and everything. And then when I got the all clear from the scan, I started back up. And yeah, just started very, very slowly doing like 2 minutes run, 1 minute walk, and I did that every other day for a week. And then my Achilles started to hurt when I got up to, I think it was about 6 or 8 minutes, so I had to miss another few days and then start back down at 2 minutes. So yeah, I'm up to I think I've named it like rehab 9, because I didn't start back at rehab 1 when my Achilles went. But I'm up to, last night I did 5 by 4 minutes. I've been to see the physio today and he's happy with how the Achilles is. We did some shockwave treatment and he's given us a few more loaded exercises for the soleus and calf raises and that. So yeah, he's happy for us to progress my loading and to progress on and start to reduce the walk sections between the runs to jogs, because that's the time when I'm starting to get the discomfort now, when I'm starting to run again after the walk. So we just said like, yeah, just scrap the walk and just run. You know, if there's no pain in the run, just run, but obviously don't go out and do a 5 mile run, just keep them short still. But the other issue I'm having, because I'm only doing like 2, 3, 4 minute run sections, I'm still doing them at like 6:20 pace. I was like, if I increase that to, you know, even 8 or 10 minutes, I'm going to slow down, and that'll probably be better for my Achilles. But yeah, on top of that, doing a lot on Zwift, getting addicted to power numbers and, you know, chasing people on a computer screen. But yeah, it's keeping my fitness is okay. I just need to get back out there and get the legs strong again.
Do you have any sort of goal races, times you'd like to be fit by again? Or
no, that's kind of the beauty of the situation for me just now. We've got nothing, you know, we don't know when races are going to resume, and, you know, there's nothing to really aim for. So I can be very disciplined with my rehab and be very patient with my rehab. Whereas if there'd been races left, right and centre, I'd probably be saying, right, I want to do one in December or January or whatever. But right now, I just want to be able to get back running, you know, so I can go out and run around the local trails or whatever for an hour and just enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, I've been so impressed by your discipline. I can't, to build up that slowly and to do it every single time, that's great.
Yeah, like I say, because of the situation we're in, it's a lot easier to do. You know, yeah. I'm just happy to be out there and doing a little bit of running. But yeah, if there was a race, I would normally have like raced, you know, last weekend. And it's the time of year when the road races are coming thick and fast normally. So I'd be trying to get some of them in. But yeah, there's nothing now to be kind of chasing to come back for. So my aim is that by the end of this month, I should hopefully be able to do 30 minutes continuous. And yeah, that's what I'm, my goals, striving towards.
Yeah, great. Well, I look forward to seeing that on Strava, so you build back up to that.
Yeah.
So in front of me here, I've got a list that Ben's produced for me of all your PBs. We've got down from 3,000 metres up to 50 kilometres.
Yeah, I've got my 800 and 1500 metre ones.
I didn't think they're on the power of 10. I don't know why Ben hasn't listed them. We'll raise that with him later. Which one are you most proud of? Which one sort of felt the best?
I think the two probably that surprised us the most were my 32:17 for 10k road.
Yeah,
you know, that was, I knew I was in good shape when I ran that, but when I saw the clock at the end, it was one of those where you go, really? you know, I thought it said 33 at the time. And I was like, oh, that's a good run. And then like I looked again, I was like, no, that's 32. Quite a phenomenal run for us that day. And the other one, similar situation, my 70:37 half marathon. It came, you know, it was the world half in Copenhagen, and I actually wasn't feeling too grand that day. I had a bit of a sore throat and an earache. So I was just like, I remember talking to the physio beforehand. I was like, oh, you know, I'm not feeling up for this. And I just took my watch off and just ran. And I remember going through the 10K and there was a clock by the side of the road. I was like, 33, that's fast. And yeah, I was just in with a good group and I was just like, just keep running. And it wasn't really until probably the last 2 kilometres that I started to like, you know, drop off the group and struggle a bit. But when I turned and I saw the clock at the end again, it was like, geez, that's quite pretty quick. So yeah, they're the two that kind of surprised us the most. Obviously the 50K, quite special, running the world best. I wasn't going into the race. I didn't even know what the world best was for that distance. My goal was to break the British record, which was 3:16, and to win the race. And that's what I set out to do. And, you know, I just ran it. I was running quite within myself that day as well, because I was very conscious about blowing up in the last 5 miles once I got past the marathon. So yeah, I was just kind of like running along. And then the team manager with just under 5K to go shouted, you're going to smash the world record. I actually turned around, why is the world record? So yeah, it was quite special to finish and be told that you've taken like 70 seconds off the world best, and it had stood for 31 years previous. So, and I always said I would only do one ultra, so, you know, I ticked all the boxes. I don't have to do another one now.
Will you try and defend that and go back to it each year? Or
well, I discovered ultra running's a bit, it's not as kind of structured as kind of the running world that I'm used to. I'm not saying normal running, but like my usual running. So with like the marathon, you know, every 2 years it's the Worlds, every 4 years it's Olympics and whatever. So I always thought it was every 2 years was the World 50K. And then I think it was like in February or something that all of a sudden went, oh, we're going to have another World 50K in November. I was like, is it quite normal that they just give you like, you know, 9 months notice there's going to be a World Championship? And they're like, oh, yeah.
You'll have to almost see if it fits into your training.
Yeah, I'm like, just, you know, do you just randomly pick events and dates and go, oh, I think we'll have a World Championship there? You know, we don't know what's going to happen next year. So, and it's in Chinese Taipei or somewhere. So I'm not sure I fancy running 31 in those conditions.
So how about the 5K PB at Sunderland 5K? Was that good to do it at a home race?
It was, yeah. And it's another one where, you know, I wasn't expecting anything of the race. I remember lying on my sofa on the afternoon with my compression leggings on, my feet up over the back of the sofa, thinking my legs feel like utter rubbish. And, you know, I went down and I was like, my warm-up was rubbish. And I was second, like, talking myself out of even running, going, is it worth it? But again, just took my watch off and just ran. And it is quite a quick course at Sunderland because you start off your first kilometre straight down a hill and then the rest of it's flat. And I didn't have a clue of any splits or anything, but I knew roughly the guys around us. And I remember chatting to one of them at about 3K, asking them what the split was. And he couldn't reply because obviously he was eyeballs out. And at the end, he was like, how could you talk at that point?
So for a marathon or for other races, do you find that you do look at your watch?
I try not to be dictated by my watch because, you know, we all go into marathons saying this is my goal pace. So, you know, 5:40s if you want to run like a 2:29, 2:28 or whatever. But if you get onto the marathon and you're feeling really good, and your watch is saying like you're running 5:35s, are you going to go, oh, I need to slow down, or do you just hold it and see how long it can last? Yeah. So I normally kind of my first 5K, 10K, I'll keep an eye on the pace to make sure I'm not, you know, it's quite easy as well to go off too fast and still feel comfortable in the early stages of a marathon. Yeah. But yeah, I don't kind of, you know, get too hung up on it. And I'll turn off my auto lap so it's not bleeping at us every mile or whatever, because they're not even accurate most of the time. Yeah. I'll just, when you're doing the big ones, you'll have kind of your 5K splits by the side of the road, or London's signaled every mile, so you know where you are anyway. But yeah, I just run and judge, can I keep this effort for 26 mile rather than can I keep this pace? And then whatever pace that effort is, you know, I just go with it.
I guess that's all part of the art of running these races, is dialing into that pace and just not relying too much on the watch.
Yeah, there's too many people just get hung up and dictated to by the watch, and then they'll finish and they'll go, I felt really good, I could have run faster. You're like, well, why didn't you? Yeah. But then if they are running faster, they don't go, oh, I think I need to slow down. They'll go, I'll bank this time.
I think it's just great to hear you say about the PBs, that two of them were run on days where you just didn't look at your watch and just ran complete feel.
I think most of my PBs, like I wore a watch for the marathon, but my others, I didn't have a watch on. And yeah, I just ran. It's, you know, you kind of know when you got the experience under your belt and you've done so many like training and races and whatever in the past, you know your effort levels. And, you know, I know the difference between half marathon effort and five K is just flat out sprint from start to finish. Yeah, it's like, you know the different levels. You don't really need a watch. You've got your own internal GPS to tell you.
It's much more reliable to go by that. And you don't get so psyched out when you look at your watch and it tells you the wrong thing or something you don't want to see. It says you're going 5 seconds too slow and you throw your whole race in.
Yeah, and it's like I said, the GPS isn't accurate. Like one of my friends did Berlin last year and she was convinced she was on for 2:45. Well, 2:44, so sub 2:45. And she's like, this is the pace, this is the pace. And then I watch, like, she hadn't even gotten to the Blandenburg gate, and I watch it said she'd done the marathon. And she's like, but I'm not on the pace I'm on then. And I was like, why did you listen to your watch? There's like markers all the way along the road. You know, you should have known what you should be at for 10K and then 15K and whatever. She was like, just trusted me watch. I was like, well, there's your lesson learned.
Your biggest performance, or, well, biggest race sports-wise, the Olympics.
Yeah.
How was it getting that call to find out that you were going to the Olympics directly?
Yeah, it was like, you know, even looking back now, it's just, it's so hard to believe that, you know, I was there on that stage, because it's something I'd dreamt about for so long. I remember vividly watching the Barcelona 92 games, and that's the one where it really captivated my heart. And, you know, for those 3 weeks, you become an expert in every single sport, you know. And I remember just like spending every waking hour like watching it on TV and, you know, buying the magazines and the newspapers. Obviously, we didn't have internet back then, and recording it on Betamax and watching it back. And yeah, it was just, I was totally captivated. And then to think, you know, 24 years later, I was standing on the start line, you know, I was in the Olympic Village, and that it's just so surreal to think of it. But I ran the qualifying time in Berlin Marathon in 2015. And from then on, everybody was saying that, you know, oh, you were shoo-in. There was only two of us that year ran the time. We still had to do the trials at London, and I knew I was in really, really good shape going into those trials. I was ready. If anybody else wanted to run fast, I was ready to run fast, but I was hoping we could just go as slow as possible and, you know, be in the top two Brits. I wasn't bothered if I did 3 hours and came second Brit. It would still be job done. And, you know, I would then recover quicker as well, hopefully. But yeah, coming down, I never truly let myself believe that I was going to make the Olympics until literally I turned that corner at Buckingham Palace, and you can see the finish line in front of you. I was in first Brit. I'd worked quite hard in that last 800 metres to shake Sonia off. And yeah, coming down there, it was just like, I saw my dad and my nephew in the grandstand on the mall, give them a big fist pump. And there's a brilliant piece of coverage on the BBC and Crammy saying that, you know, it's a dream come true. 37, probably never going to get this chance again. Years and years of hard work, and, you know, she's smiling, she's celebrating, and she's made it. And I didn't actually, you know, I still can't physically remember those final few hundred metres. I've had to watch it back on the iPlayer to kind of, you know, remind myself. And you do spend, I say I didn't believe that I was going to make it until that point, but you do spend a little bit of time trying to imagine what it's like when you do finish, and, you know, how you're going to feel, how you're going to celebrate and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, you've got every emotion you can ever think of running through you. Obviously, you know, I was over the moon, ecstatic that I'd made it. But there was like a disbelief that I'd made it, because, like, yeah. I say, you dream of these things. You put Olympians up on a pedestal, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got that after your name. And, you know, there was the relief that I'd eventually done it, because 18 months earlier, I'd packed in my job and everything and went full time. So, you know, there was the relief that that had worked out. There was a tinge of sadness because we'd lost my granddad and my uncle not long beforehand, so it was quite sad that they weren't there. My uncle was a marathon runner too. My granddad was one of my greatest supporters. And yeah, you just have all these emotions running through you. And at the same time, you have, you know, the world's press in front of you saying, smile this way, microphones under, and you don't know what you're saying to these microphones. And, you know, about half an hour later, I finally got a minute to myself, and I sat on the curb and took my shoes off, and I just broke down in tears and just cried. And there was some poor little volunteer from the marathon came over, and she put her arm around us, and she said, are you okay, love? And I just looked at her and went, I'm going to the Olympics. And she was like, okay. She must have thought I was absolutely nuts. But yeah, it was just like, you know, I still had this part of us though where I'd fulfilled all the selection criteria, and, you know, I'd run the time, I'd finished first Brit in London, so it was guaranteed selection. But until I had that letter in front of us in black and white from the British Olympic Association to say congratulations, I was like, it might be a joke. They might not pick us. They might decide I'm not good enough still. So
the awful thing about marathon running too is that you've got to put everything into that build-up for an Olympics. You've got to balance that with not getting injured and not getting to fulfill your dream of standing on that start line.
Yeah.
Was that your most terrifying build-up, do you think, to a marathon?
It was, because I was having a neural problem in my leg as well. And I'd done the World Half in Cardiff. I think that was 5 weeks before. And I lost all power in my leg. And it was just like this weird neural sensation. I could still run. I still ran like, I think just under 73 minutes at that race, but it was a disappointing performance and something just didn't feel right in this leg. And at the same race, my roommate came down with a heavy cold like the day of the race. And I was like, oh no. And like the next day I was flying off to Fontainebleau for my final training camp. And I got up there and I was like, I'm getting a cold. And then a few days into the camp, there was a norovirus went through the camp. And like everybody that was getting ill was getting quarantined.
I just wanted everyone to stay away from you.
Yeah. And then it got to the point that there were so many people ill, I was like, can I be quarantined? So they just put me in an apartment by myself, because all the rest were track runners, so they had plenty of time to get ill and recover. I've got the trials in 2 weeks. I need to get away from all of this. So yeah, it was kind of, you know, you wrap yourself in bubble wrap and, you know, every little thing, antibacterial hand wash is your best friend. And, you know, I was wearing face masks back then, never mind now.
How did it go for you in Rio? What were the conditions like?
It was really hot because I trained a lot in Fontainebleau, and obviously it's not as hot and as humid as Rio, but it was still getting up to high 20s over there, so I was used to the heat. We'd done a lot of heat acclimation work, so hot baths, saunas, that kind of stuff. We'd spent time in Brazil on like a 10-day pre-champs camp to acclimatise. And yeah, the good thing was it was hot and humid, so it meant I could slow my pace down and just enjoy every second out there. We weren't trying to run really fast. You were just trying to, you know, obviously finish as high up as I can. And I paced it quite well. I think at 5K, I was 76th, I think, and then ended up finishing 27th. So, you know, I paced it really well. I came through the field, and from about as early as 10K onwards, it was just people dropping by the side of the road everywhere. It was like a war zone in place. And because it was a looped course as well, you were coming back around each time.
Yeah, passing people.
Yeah.
It's a better way to run it that way, isn't it?
And it was the longest finishing straight ever. It was 600 metres when you came into the stadium, because it's the stadium where they hold the Mardi Gras festival. And like the crowds in there were massive, and just, you know, I just slowed down and enjoyed that final 600 metres. I was like, I'm never going to do an Olympics again. I'm not bothered about my time. I knew there was nobody going to catch us, and just enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was actually a really impressive time as well.
Yeah, for the conditions. Yeah, I did like 2:34, I think it was. Yeah,
that's great to do such a big race and race well at it.
Yeah. And the best thing about it was my parents were out there. Procter & Gamble had provided them with a hotel through Team GB. So that meant they could afford to come over and watch us. And, you know, they absolutely loved it. And running past them for the last time, my mum shouted, like, you know, go on, Alison, we're so proud of you. And that actually made my bottom lip quiver. I was like, don't make us cry. But, you know, to hear your parents, you know, shout, you know, we're proud of you, that's just one of the best moments you can have.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing to have them there. That's an experience for all of you.
Yeah, they loved it. They were off seeing Christ the Redeemer and Sugarloaf and all sorts. I didn't even get to see them over there. I was like, don't forget, it's me you've come to see. Can I at least meet you?
They had a holiday too.
Yeah.
So looking at your history, you've been self-coached for most of your career. what do you think you've learned through being self-coached, and have you made mistakes along the way?
Yeah, like, you know, I always say this to people, I'm not perfect, I'm by no means an expert, there's still a huge amount to learn. I'm probably an expert in me. It doesn't mean I'm an expert in providing training to anybody else, because, you know, I'm not daft. I know what works for me doesn't work for everyone. But, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes along the way, which I do try to pass on, because it is kind of general mistakes, you know, overdoing it, under recovery, getting carried away with your mileage, getting fixated on your mileage. I tell people, you know, why do you aim for arbitrary numbers? You know, 100 mile a week. What difference does it make? 90, 110, 100, you know. Don't get stuck up on it. And things like not getting dictated by your watch. So, yeah, I've made a lot of mistakes. I've learned a lot. But in terms of success, I think I have been quite successful with the self-coaching. I turned to it in 2012 and I had a lot of ideas that I wanted to implement. My dad was a marathon runner. He ran 2:21 and he was coached by Alan Storey. So I spoke to Alan and said, you know, what did my dad do in training? Because in my theory, his DNA made us. So what worked for him should work for me. And, you know, it was no coincidence that the things ideas I had and wanted to implement for myself were pretty much the type of stuff that he used to do for my dad. So I was like, you know, I've watched him training as I've grown up. I've obviously subconsciously picked up on these things. And yeah, I put them all together and I've ran PBs over every distance since then. So, you know, I've done something right along the way, obviously. Like I say, there's still a lot to learn about coaching other people. People say, would you do anything differently? And no, in terms of coaching and training, I don't think I would do anything different.
Do you have any other areas where you think there's still room for improvement, like areas that you still think you could get more out of yourself? Or do you think you've nailed training for a marathon now?
I don't think I'm going to go any faster now, but I do think I could have gone another 30 to 60 seconds faster on the marathon. So, you know, I do think I could have done 2:28 on a very, very good day, you know, perfect course, perfect conditions. I do think maybe just scrape under that 2:28, but, you know, I'm happy with 2:29.06. And, you know, even with that, I look back on the race and I can pick out little bits. There was one part of that race just before halfway, I literally swerved across to the other side of the road to give my nephew a high five. I was like, there's my 6 seconds. Yeah. You know, I'm always saying to him, he was only like 7 at the time or something. I'm like, you cost me a 2:28. It means nothing to him. He's just like, what? But yeah, I think that's the only bit where I think everything else, like I said, you know, my 5K, my 10K, I think I've totally getting all I could out of those.
You run for Sunderland Strollers at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you still make it to club runs when you're training locally?
Our club it's very diversified. It's a drinking club with a running problem. So, you know, we've got over 300 members, ranging from somebody who literally can only just run 100 metres. So we have a beginners group, a big beginners group every January. And yeah, every year you'll get people that turn up and they can't run 100 metres. So you've got them from that up to myself, who's an Olympian. So it's a massive range. I've managed to persuade a handful of the lads, kind of 3 or 4 of them, to do track sessions with us. So we have a Tuesday night brunch of the club. Main training night for the club is like Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. And yeah, it's a while since I've actually trained with them, but I do quite often go down the track on a Wednesday night and hold a stopwatch and do a bit of coaching. Good. Try to teach people to run in lane 1, because you're running 7 metres more if you run in lane 2. But they still run 4 abreast. Yeah. I'm like, you know, you're doing 400 metre reps and they're running in lane 3. I'm like, what are you doing? But yeah, I will get through to them one day. I'm in a single file, because even if you spread out by 20 metres, you know, if there's no gaps in that train, you're running the same pace at the front as what you are at the back. Heads around that. They hear you, like, you know, me shouting 90 seconds as the first person's coming through, but they don't think, well, it took me 2 seconds to cross the line at the start. I'm still 2 seconds back, so that's still 90 seconds.
Still 90, yeah.
But yeah, they'll get there one day.
It's good to stay connected with the club.
Yeah. And
I bet it's really inspirational for the other runners there to...
Yeah, to I do, like, I went down just when the first lockdown finished. It was a horrible night as well. We had, like, lots of rain and wind and everything. It was freezing cold. And I was coaching, like, what we call the A group, so the faster lads. And like I said, they were running, like, 90 seconds for 400 metre reps. And I was giving them little bits of tips and that. And there was three coaches there, but I felt quite bad at the end because I was the only one that they came over to thank, because they're like, oh, we're so, like, honoured that you've came down, you've given us all these tips. I'm like, what about the other two coaches? Don't neglect them. They've done the same. But it's because I don't get down there regularly. So, you know, it is quite special for them. But I do hope, you know, once everything gets back to some form of normal, that I will get down there a lot more and, you know, stand with a stopwatch, because that's what I want to do. I want to get into coaching and coaching at, like, you know, a club grassroots level and pass on some of that knowledge that I've gained over the years. And I'm not bothered about, you know, performance level coaching and that kind of stuff. It starts getting too political. You know, I've had some good grassroots coaches in my past and I want to honour them by passing on the knowledge that they give me.
Really, it's great at the running clubs to see. We've just recently had Christina Boxer turn up at Worcester AC for coaching. It's great to have. We feel really lucky to have somebody like that come and turn up at our track and want to coach. Whilst preparing for this, I was looking at your other world record attempt and the one that my daughter was much more impressed with, the superhero attempt for St Benedict's. Do you have any plans to do any more world record attempts like that?
Yeah, I might try the marathon one. I think the marathon's 2:47. Camille Herron, the American ultra runner, she's got that. So, yeah, I had a bit of banter with her about it, saying, you know, I might go for your record next. But when I was researching that one, the amount of different world records you can get for, you know, running dressed as a, like, a charity ribbon or running dressed as a fruit. And some of them, like, you look at it and you go, 3.5 hours, 4 hours. You're like, that's quite easy. But then you look at the costumes and go, I'm in that costume.
Imagine the chafing.
Yeah, like dressed as a toilet roll and it's like 4.5 hours. And you're like, wait on, how do you run dressed as a toilet roll?
My daughter will be watching with interest to see if any others do turn up.
Well, the trick is, you know, the Wonder Woman outfit, it wasn't restrictive or anything. It was the cape. If it was windy, I was worried I was going to get garrotted. But yeah, luckily it was a tailwind, so it was pushing the cape forward. I used it more as a sail.
And that was shortly after your 50k.
Yeah, it was like, you know, the Sunday after. So I'd finished in Romania the 50k, and then 7 days later I was standing on the start line of the Great North Run, having not run a step in between. I didn't even do a cool down after the 50k. It was straight into anti-doping. Yeah, 3 hours in anti-doping. And then, yeah, I was quite worried as the time was going on, because when I applied for the record as well, it was, I think it was like 1:41. So I was like, yeah, I can jog around that, you know, even if my legs are knackered from the 50k. And then a few weeks before, I got an email from Guinness saying this American lass has taken the record down to 1:24. And I started thinking, that's a bit faster. You know, we're talking just over 6 minute mile now. And then it was like warm at the Great North Run. And because I know the guys from the Great North Run as well, like Brendan and Ollie's team and the BBC, they'd said to us, can you start on the celebrity side? And we want you kind of front line center shot for the start line camera. So when it starts, ideally I'm at the arrowhead going off. I'm like, yeah, that's okay. Then I'm thinking, what happens if my legs don't work when the gun goes? I'm going to get trampled by 50,000 people. And if you watch it, like, in slow motion and close up, you can see my legs kind of stutter when the gun goes on the start line. I'm like, Oh crap. But yeah, that was quite scary, having all those people lined up behind you. The other side of it is, you know, me asking for sponsorship to run a half marathon, everybody's like, seriously, you do it every day? And then I'm starting to get a bit nervous because, like I say, I had to run like 124, having just run the 50k a week before. And I'm like, if I don't run this, I'll just end up looking like a Wally in an outfit.
Puts more pressure than a big race.
And like, I've had all this like media interview and everything, and I just look like a right idiot. I can't even blend in. So it was like literally just as much caffeine as I could, and yeah, I just kind of got through it on caffeine and adrenaline. And once you get going, the crowds were just so good. They were like literally just the energy was just pushing you along. And you know, like I say, I had a lot of local media interest, so people were recognising us and giving us big shouts and that. And even if they weren't shouting by name, they're like, you know, shout, go on, Wonder Woman. It's not often that they see somebody that far up in costume. So yeah. I was getting loads of encouragement and high fives. And I was singing and I was dancing, taking beers off the crowd at 11 mile. And yeah, I just absolutely loved it. And, you know, I finished and I saw the time. And again, I was like, probably didn't really need to go that fast, but hopefully I should keep this record for quite a while now.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, now yeah. You don't have to go back and do it.
Then you had Paula on the BBC going, well, it's not actually record eligible this course, so she hasn't really got the world record. I'm like, cheers, mate. And Crammy's like, yeah, let's not go into that, Paula.
We've got a few quickfire questions here that we ask to everybody we interview. So if you could go for a run with any athlete, runner or otherwise, dead or alive, who would it be?
I think it would probably be Greta Rice. Yeah, she's like, you know, pioneer of female marathon runner, 9 times New York winner, you know, world record holder, world cross country. And you know, she was just an absolute amazing athlete. My dad was very, very lucky. He got to run with her at London. And, you know, there's some brilliant footage on the BBC as she drops him like a hot knife. And, you know, I don't bring it up on a daily basis, but I have found that footage on YouTube. I keep on reminding him. Yeah, definitely great advice. You know, she was taken from us far too young, sadly died of colon cancer. But yeah, it's the one that kind of I would love to definitely, you know, pick our brains about that training in the Norwegian winters. And, you know,
if you could only compete in one race per year, so not a distance, but an actual race, which one would it be?
Tricky. I've got two that I really, really like. So the Great North Run, just for the atmosphere, but it wouldn't be in the elites. It would be in with the masses.
Yeah, and, to you enjoy know, it.
Yeah, the atmosphere. And being from the Northeast, it's just an icon up here. It's the one thing, you tell anybody that you run up here, and it's the first question, have you done the Great North Run? Yeah, I've done that. And, you know, no matter what sort of distance you run, it's always, have you done the Great North Run? The other one, it's another local race, the Bladon Race. And, you know, it was my first ever road race when I was 16. And it's got a great tradition up here. You get about 3,000 people running it. And it took me 21 years and about 16 attempts over those 21 years to finally win it. And I've went on to win it 3 times now. The record is 4 wins by a female with Jill Hunter. And she's from Bladon, so I'd love to kind of equal that record. And then, you know, I'll leave her to be the queen of Bladon. I'll be happy to be the princess of Bladon. But yeah, it's a great race. It's always on the 9th of June, no matter what day that falls on. It's always the same course. And it's a quirky distance. It's like 5.7 miles. Yeah, you get a beer and a ham and peas pudding sandwich or tripe at the end. Well, it's kind of a folklore up here.
Sounds good. It's on the 9th of June's my birthday, so right. I'll make it aim to do it 1 year.
Yeah, you should. It's great. It's like the first 5k is crazy fast. Because, like I say, you've lost 3,000 people. And again, it's one of those where you've just got to run hell for leather or you're going to get trampled. Slightly downhill the first 5K, so it's quite easy. You know, I've done like a 15:30 first 5K. Maybe I shouldn't have done that because I've still got like 2.5 mile left to run.
What's your favourite session, if there can be a favourite session?
Probably the long run. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love just going out and, yeah, just doing a long run at a good, steady pace. When I'm doing my marathon training, I'll go up to 26.2, so full distance.
Okay.
And, you know, I normally do that in, like, around about the 250 pace. So it's a good, decent pace for a training run. One of the great things about training for the 50K was, you know, I did 2 29-mile runs and I loved those.
Yeah.
So one of them, we literally had every weather in that 29 miles and I ran it at like 6:30 pace, so I knew I was in good shape. I had my dad on the bike with us to do drinks practice. And yeah, you know, people think I'm mad when I say I love the long run, but you know, I would do a long run every day if I could. I just being out, and where I live in Sunderland, it's great for running. So from my house, I can run 3 mile in one direction. I'm on the seafront, and I can run for miles along the seafront and the cliff tops. I can run 3 miles in the other direction. I'm in the countryside and get onto really nice trails along the riverside. And there's the path, kind of about 1.5 miles. Once I'm onto the cycle path, if I really wanted to do a long run, it goes all the way up to Cumbria. Yeah. It's a lot easier if you start in Cumbria and come this way, because you normally have a tailwind. It's the coast-to-coast cycle path, so it literally goes all the way along, and most of it's off-road. So, yeah, I'm spoilt for choice for running around here.
What would be your least favourite session?
Hills. Didn't need any thinking.
Yeah.
It's one of the things about being self-coached. It's like, you know, the sessions that you don't like the most are the ones that you need the most. Because for me, I'm absolutely rubbish at running up hills. I don't mind doing a long run, like on hilly terrain and that, but doing a race where you've got a hill or anything, cross country, anything like that, and I hate them. And it's because I'm not good at them. My technique isn't great for them. I don't use my kind of quads and my glutes the way that you should running up hills. I just drag myself up. So I knew I had to do more hills to try and improve that. But because I hated them, it was hard for us to program. So you just have to kind of switch off and look at it that you're programming for somebody else and not yourself. Because otherwise, yeah, it would be, you know, like I said, I'd be doing a long run every second day, 10-mile tempo in between that. And, you know, I'd be getting good at things that I'm already good at. I need to work on my strengths, which is hills, but I hate them. It's crazy because, like, when I go to Kenya and Fontainebleau, everything is hilly. Like, you know, there's no flat. Even the track in Kenya is not flat. But, you know, I love being over there and running around, and they get you really strong. But if somebody said, go and do a hill session on one of those, or even just a hill session here, you know, I'd be sitting in tears.
Do you have a go-to track or song that you put on before racing or to get through a hard session?
Not really, no. I used to listen to music when I trained and when I warmed up, but yeah, I just got out of the habit. And you know, there'd be a lot of times I'd come back and I couldn't tell you what I'd listened to. It was just kind of like background noise. But then I also got a bit kind of paranoid that, you know, people could be creeping up on us, or I could be missing traffic noise and put myself in danger and that. And because a lot of the time I do run by myself on trails, I don't really want to be running with headphones in. Sometimes when I'm warming up, if it's quite a big race and I am a bit nervous and that, I'll put headphones on, but I'll not actually be listening to anything. It's just my way of telling people, you know, don't talk to us. But it used to be Eminem, Lose Yourself, and that would kind of like get you psyched up. And then Stereo Phonics, Bartender and the Thief. Each of that to kind of got your heart racing a bit. So yeah, they were kind of my two go-to songs.
Have you got a book or a TV recommendation? We've all had a bit more time on our hands for watching.
At the minute I'm watching The Crown, the latest series. I got confused on Sunday. I was like, oh, the new season's out. Got all excited, put it on. I'm watching that. I'm sure I've seen this before. And I was like, I can't, it just came out. I hadn't realised I'd started with the last episode of the last series. I was like, that's why I've seen it before. So yeah, I got a bit confused with that one. And I'm also watching The Queen's Gambit.
Oh, yeah. I've started watching that. That's
yeah, really I think good. I'm about 4 episodes into that. Books, I've just been doing like a pre-release read of a book that's about to come out because they wanted just to put a bit of blurb on the back. So I'll not mention which one it is, but it is a running book and I was quite captivated by it. It was a good book. My 2 favourite running books is Charlie Spedden's.
Okay.
I think like if you've not read it, it's good the way he goes into it. It's not kind of traditional sport psychology, but it's how he kind of, he knows if he puts all his training towards one focus race, it doesn't matter the build-up races, you know, he might do a local race because he's from Antigua, and he might have finished like say a 10th in a local 10k, but then he knows 5 weeks later when he runs, you know, the LA Olympics or whatever, he's going to do really well and he wins a medal. It's kind of how to kind of structure that and know that that focus race is your all-important race and your other ones, if you do well, it's a bonus. If not, well, you know, you put it down to hard train and run. And I read Dina Castor's book, Let Your Mind Run. Again, that one's really good from like, I didn't realise it was going to be a psychology type thing, although I should have with the title. But yeah, that was really good. And I read that in the lead up to the 50K. And fiction book, Once a Runner. I love that book. Quentin Cassidy, he's a miler from America. One, like, you know, it is all fiction. He takes himself off into a hut in the woods and just lives as a recluse and trains. And, you know, the writer, John Parker, he must have been some sort of runner at some times. I don't know much about him, but, you know, the detail he goes to into the training sessions that this Quentin Cassidy goes, you know, he does like, I think it was 40 by 400 and he comes back and he's peeing blood and, you know, he just eats all this food and then he sleeps for 16 hours. And you're like, you know, that is pretty much real life. If you did something like that, that's how you'd react. So yeah, it's a great book. I love that one.
Where can people find you on social media if they're not already
following? I'm back on Twitter. I got hacked about 2 weeks ago and was locked out for a week. But I'm back on there now. Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook, but I'm not as active on Facebook. And I'm on Strava, so, and Zwift. So yeah, I'm pretty much across everything. I haven't quite got into TikTok. I'm a bit too old to understand TikTok.
Yeah, I don't understand that one either.
And Snapchat as well. I'm like, I don't understand this.
Yeah, no, I've heard from teenagers that we're old for not using Snapchat, but I don't understand.
My nephew's just gone into senior school and he was still, he was like, can I show you this on TikTok? I'm like, I haven't got TikTok. He's like, you what? I was like, I'm 42. I'm not meant to have TikTok.
Thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to us tonight. It's been amazing.
It's been good fun.